And this is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. Got a few articles to share with you today, some thoughts. And don't forget, check out our Facebook page, which is doing better all the time. More people involved, more discussions going on, more posting videos, essays, opinions. So you, if you're on PRN.fm on the page there, and you go to Occupied Territory homepage, Occupied Territory, and you'll find your way to the Facebook page. Or you can Google Facebook and Occupied Territory, and that'll take you there. So participate in that. And in just a minute, we'll be back, and we'll have our discussion. Okay, we're back. Occupied Territory. Things change. Things move along all the time. I personally have recently had a kind of, I think I've talked about this on the air a couple places, a couple of times, a sort of personal liberation as far as the world situation and politics goes. I've been reading the New York Times. I'm 67 years old now. And I, even though I know I sound like I'm 27, I understand that. But I've been reading the New York Times since I was around 11 years old, and I come from a very political family, almost sort of liberal to left-wing political family, you know, Roosevelt Democrats. And these days, a Roosevelt Democrat, somebody like who's defined as a Roosevelt Democrat, who believes in some of the policies that Roosevelt followed and the way he kept the country at least saved from anarchy, if not saved for capitalism. Anybody who did those kinds of things now or proposed those kinds of programs, Social Security, you know, Medicare. Those things came out of nowhere then. That was unheard of. And people, I had an uncle who moved to Canada. I had an uncle, Ed, not my uncle, he's a granduncle, my grandmother's brother, who was very rich and had a diamond business, in wholesale and retail diamond business in Manhattan. And the only family millionaire. Actually, there was another one, but not so close. And when he said that when this communist, he was going about, I didn't hear this, this is told to me by my relatives, I wasn't alive then. He says, if this communist gets elected, I'm moving out of the country. He actually did. The man moved to Canada for 4 years, then came back. I guess the diamond business wasn't so good up in Canada. But and capitalism really, you know, you can't move out of the capital of capitalism. The planetary capital of capitalism is the United States of America. Greed is everywhere. Trade is everywhere. Bad business, dishonesty, you know, monopolies, corporate corruption. All of this is everywhere and has been everywhere for a long, long time. Any historical fiction or actual history books will tell you this. But America is absolutely the modern final realization of capitalism at its fullest peak, where it affects absolutely everything and gets worse all the time. So, but my parents and the people who on both sides of my family were absolute Roosevelt Democrats, you know, and my grandparents, too. They thought that what he was doing was the right thing to do for people. It was about helping other people and not just saving the country from anarchy and from poverty, which is what he did, but helping other people. That was the essence of it, right? Part of it was possibly even a religious point of view. Even though the people in my family weren't religious, in fact, some of them were militantly anti-religious, there was still a shared sort of, how can I put this, what would you call Jewish people? A race? A religion? I don't know. There's always these arguments. I got one vote for race out there, but this could start an argument anywhere, believe me. But on the other hand, you know, what food you order could start a violent argument among two Jews. Since being Jewish, I understand that. But basically, there was an understanding that you couldn't just, and this goes against, of course, the vicious, ridiculous stereotype of, you know, Jews being the greedy capitalists, the old Nazi, you know, Russian stereotype that was perpetrated on everybody. But the idea that what you did affected other people, and that if you went too far with this kind of thing, no matter how greedy and grasping, and in every culture and every religion, you know, every group of people, there are greedy, grasping people more than other people. The rabbi in my synagogue, who I listened to about three times in my life before I was old enough to be allowed to walk out on the whole, you know, mythology of it all. But the whole idea all the time was, don't cheat, don't steal, don't lie, unless you really have to. And there was this, there was an understanding that people in business did this to get by or to make money, but don't overdo it. You know, because why? Because you can't let other people sink beneath the waves. You can't just, like Ron Paul said at one national debate famously when they were having figuring out who the candidate was going to be, and somebody said, well, what would you do if a man is sick and had no health insurance because he didn't want the government to have any power over anything? He said, let him die in a ditch. Let him die. And then, I think it was the moderator said, and, you know, and he's just sort of lying there, or he's requiring help. And he said, well, that man just won't get any help, and that's the way things go. And he had that sort of crazy look that Ron Paul gets on his face sometimes, like a psychopathic lizard, where he blinks those big eyes of his and looks at the camera, and there's like, it's like temporarily his soul took a vacation. So this is the point of view, right? And it's a gigantically oppositional, massive black and white point of view in politics. But it's not Democrats against Republicans. And I have an article here to back up what I'm telling you in a minute, a recent article from the Sunday Times. But don't make the mistake of thinking that in our current society, it's the Democrats against the Republicans. That's wishful thinking and childhood mythology. It is not the Democrats against Republicans. It is 90% of the Democrats and the Republicans against the rest of us. Okay? Then maybe there's 10% of Democrats who actually mean or really want to help other people. 90% of the rest of them are hacks, prostitutes, fat leeches, and they belong. Yeah, there's no difference between Republicans and Democrats. None whatsoever. And, but I grew up in this family where everybody was extremely liberal. And if not left-wing, my father had been a communist. He wasn't a member of the Communist Party, but he, at this, a hotbed of communism. In fact, the breeding ground of communist theory and even practice, and I'm not talking about dictatorship and spying, but communism in a way that people understood it in the best possible sense, where people get together and share what they have, and everybody participates, and you don't let other people sink, and nobody is allowed to be too greedy or have too much, because that's just not the way you're supposed to live in the world. This is how we were brought up. I clicked an article just the other day out of the paper. This is on the front page of the paper here. At top school, cheating voids 70 pupils' tests. The most prestigious high school in New York City, which is a public school, and maybe one of the most prestigious and the best high schools in the entire country, in the history of the country, is called Stuyvesant High School in New York City. You have to take a test. It's based on a citywide test, and if you get a high enough grade, then they admit you to this place, and only the best students go there. The pressure is tremendous, right, to excel and to do better, and of course, then there's the pressure while you're in high school to get into the best Ivy League schools, and it's the competition is astounding. You know, you're talking about when it comes to places like Harvard or Yale or Columbia or NYU or what other. You're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of applicants, and only a couple of hundred or a few hundred accepted, you know, from public schools across the country. So, or tens of thousands and maybe 1,000 applicants, something like that. So people cheat. And people cheat now. People have always cheated in school, right? I mean, did you, when you were in school, however old, maybe you're 40, or I know most of my audience is in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. When you were in school, did you cheat? If you're listening to me and you're younger than that, you know, you can raise your hand too. You know, nobody can see you. You won't be identified. We don't have the technology yet, I don't think. I don't know. Is the government, is the NSA able to actually see the people I'm talking to yet? Maybe tomorrow they'll figure out how to do that. Or Google will help them. But so stay away from your computer. Don't turn on, get away from your iPad and your iPhone, your smartphone. Don't go anywhere near anything electrical. And then tell me you're not. Do you know people in school who cheated? Did you cheat? When I was a kid in school, it was considered by everybody, no matter what the race was or creed or color or whatever progressive silly word. People didn't cheat, and people who did cheat were very rare. And it's true. I don't know. It's true. And it's just a regular city, you know, like elementary school, junior high, public school I went to. The cheating was very unusual. It was unusual to cheat. And if people caught you cheating, first of all, I suppose there was always some rat student, some idiot, you know, ass-kissing student who would turn somebody in. But we didn't really hear about that. I don't think students ever turned anybody else in for cheating. Because unfortunately, the schools I went to, it would be worth your life to do that. It was not a refined sort of place where I went to school. And if anybody knew that you had turned them in or ratted on them for anything that you did, you know, like drawing, you know, stuff on the bathroom wall or whatever, it could be literally almost fatal. So nobody really did that. But if you got caught cheating, if you were stupid enough to get caught, or if you just got caught, because very few people really did cheat. And after all, I was sitting out there, right? I mean, we sat out there. We were in the crowd. We knew who was cheating and who wasn't. Hardly anybody cheated. And when somebody did, even though they may have had other qualities that people admired, like if, and this is back in the 50s, you understand, but if they were smart or if they were attractive or charming or they were a good athlete or whatever, sexy, you know, if they had some other big attribute that makes a big difference when you're a kid more than when you're an adult, except in America, I should say. Well, then you could excuse them for it, right? But still, even if you did excuse them, if it was the star this or the most beautiful girl in the class or a guy who was the best runner or the most charming or whatever it was, cheating always poisoned the atmosphere about this person. Their aura was always a little dented and damaged because they cheated. And you didn't cheat. But cheating is on the rise everywhere now. And more on in schools where there's more pressure, you know, in a lot of places where it doesn't make any difference, unfortunately, sadly, because of the economic, political, race and class system in the country, where it doesn't make much difference if you cheat, because when you get out of school, you're not going to get a job anyhow, hardly. But in the most pressured, high pressured, prestigious schools where colleges look to recruit people from or expect people to come from, and these are the smartest kids generally. First of all, you've got private schools, and I'm sure it's the same way in almost every town or city across the country. If you have more money than other people, you can afford, and we're talking about a lot of money, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year to send your kid. And this is, you know, elementary school, junior high school, high school, could be $60,000 to send your kid a year, right? What, higher than what the average family earns for everything, for food, rent, shelter, gasoline, energy. That much money is spent by tens of thousands of people in New York City to send their kids to various private schools and in the suburbs of New York. And it's an astounding thing, right? So these are smarter kids, a lot of them. And the kids in these elite public schools, Stuyvesant is one of them in New York City, and there's a couple of others, they are smarter than other kids. They're just naturally smarter. They absorb information better. They have a higher IQ. They're sharper. They're faster. Maybe their family, they have a family tradition of study and discipline more than other kids. It's a long, complicated conversation. But cheating is endemic in these places now. People cheat all the time. I became aware of this when my kids both got into these prestigious public high schools in New York City. I mean, we didn't have the money to send them, you know, to a private school. We might have. If we could have, because these schools could be a little overcrowded and sometimes a little dangerous, right? But we sent them to the public schools, and they thrived and got into good colleges, right? Not fancy colleges, but really good colleges, and got a lot of scholarships and things. But I became aware of it when my kids, who are now, you know, sort of an average age, let's say there's two of them, their average age is 30. When they started telling me in high school that there was a lot of cheating going on, and then one of them even admitted once that that she cheated, you know, on a test once. And I got huffy and bad about it, right? I said, you can't do that. And I tried to explain why. But, you know, she says, you don't understand what's going on out there. She said, it's like, you know, it's your throat they're after all the time. I mean, you've got to compete, and people cheat. So the other day they discovered that 70 kids, which is a lot, right, had cheated on a what's called a New York State Regents test. It's a statewide test to measure basic proficiency. In other words, you can't move ahead in school, or you can't graduate, I think it is, unless you get a certain minimum score. And it's almost like pass-fail. So here's these kids in the school who were some of the smartest kids in the entire country. I mean, really smart kids, right? Are cheating on the most basic subjects, history and English. One of the things they cheated on was physics, which is difficult, right, for a lot of people, obviously. But they cheated on history and English. They could do that half asleep, wake them up in the middle of the night. They could pass a history. But they wanted to get 100% on the test. This is how it is these days. It's all, unless you get 100%, you're a loser. And so they're all competing to get 100%. So they cheated with their, guess what? With their smartphones and with texting. The same technology, same old story, the same technology that makes it better for all of us in certain ways makes things much easier to be bad in other ways, right? So you could have an Arab Spring, you know, with cell phone or social networking or cell phone technology or texting, and you could have mass cheating or whatever, you know, with the same equipment. So these people cheated, and it was a huge number of people, and now they're all being suspended or they're, you know, being thrown out of student societies and honor societies. It'll affect their college, whether or not they get into certain colleges, and they're paying the bill for it, which they should pay for, right? And but this is all based on, getting around to what I started talking about, a certain attitude in this country. And, you know, now it's the political race for the president. And then they'll see who's going to retain control of Congress and who's going to retain control of the Senate. Are Democrats going to retain control of the Senate? Are the Republicans going to lose ground in the House? Who's going to be the president? And you know what, of course, it doesn't make one damn bit of difference who controls the Congress and who's the president. Not one damn bit of difference. Like I mentioned the other day, think about how it's been in your life. Think of 10 years ago, 20 years ago, depending how old you are, 30, 40 years ago, and you voted and voted and voted, and you tried to vote for the lesser of two evils. And you voted, maybe most of you voted probably for a Democrat instead of a Republican. People who listen to this station, to this show, you know, more likely to be Democrats. Is your life any better? Or do you look around and you see everything being worse? Except for one or two things, right? Maybe, you know, some improvements. And I'm not talking about whether you can communicate with somebody instantaneously and meet up with them on a certain corner or create a flash mob or whatever it is. You know, and here I am, you know, I have an eternal war going on between me and other people who are obviously a generation younger. I mean, you know, what the advantages and disadvantages are of social networking, these devices. But I'm going to use them all I can to greater good, of course. I would never use them for anything wrong. But so you know, but think about it. If you look around environmentally, if you look around culturally, like how smart people are or what endeavors they're involved in or the level of art, look at the level of journalism, look at the level of TV journalism, of regular journalism. Just generally check the level. Where's your thermometer? But get your stupometer out. Stupometer measures the level of stupidity in the general culture. Get your level of stupidity out and take it and, you know, stick it under the tongue or shove it up the ass of the general culture. Wait a few minutes and then read it. This culture is stupider than it's ever been before. The level of generalized idiocy, lack of information, ignorance, lack of ability to even reflect or think in a way which even resembles adulthood is so endemic as to be astounding. I mean, if you look at a graph over the last 50 years, you would see the level of intelligence just go down, 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 down. It's probably, you know, it's one of those like comic things now. It's below the chart where they have to paste on another piece of paper. It's below zero. And it's astounding. Yes, more and more people are sharing more and more information. And yet, have we gotten any more intelligent in this country? Generally speaking, no. We have actually gotten stupider, and this is, you know, proved by polls and by tests and by researchers. People know less than they used to. They have less information. They use logic less. There's less reflection. When you have a world where people can communicate instantaneously, obviously it has its advantages. But the disadvantage is, in a country like this, where people are given to impulse and to greed and to grasping and to not thinking about the effects of what they do, is that you wind up with people who are even more greedy and stupid and grasping all the time. So this is what we have. So here we are in an election year, And I was talking about my personal liberation. Here is what it is, boys and girls, my personal liberation. I don't have to read about this anymore. I can skip all the television shows. I can skip the speeches. I can skip the debates. In the paper, there's 2, 3, 4 pages. And these days, of course, the newspaper, which is where I like to get my news instead of online or off a device. I love to get my news from the newspaper. Generally speaking, you can read it easier, and there's a lot more of it, and there's more room to do research. It's not a tweet, not Twitter. It's not a short article. It's usually in-depth stuff, and also just it's easier for me to read. I don't like the glare on screens, any kind of screen. So here I am, looking at all this. It used to be, since I was a kid, I would read about all this. And when I was growing up, people still believed, the Democrats actually were different than the Republicans. When I was in the 50s and 60s and even in the 70s, up till around the 80s or so, maybe, the Democrats actually were distinguishable from the Republicans. You would have a lot of Democrats in Congress or running in local offices or in statewide offices or even as a presidential candidate, who were more committed to the idea of helping other people, that we're all in the same boat and we should all do as we do well, other people should do well. And it's not this crap about trickle down. In other words, the major Republican or conservative point of view is if everybody does well for themselves and we don't, tax them to death and interfere with them, then we'll all benefit from it. Yeah, absolutely. Well, now everybody knows that this is as bogus and stupid and foolish as anything could possibly be. Nobody really believes this anymore except, dyed-in-the-wool. You know who believes this? And I don't think even they believe it. Really rich people, they don't believe it, but they want you to believe it. They want you to believe, just like, and when I say this, I'm talking about a guy like Obama, too, or three-quarters of the Democrats. People who have a lot of money and power, they want you to believe that you work really hard. You stay in school. Did you ever see the movie RoboCop? It's one of the great movies, right? And RoboCop, they ask him, a huge corporation called Omnicorp has taken over. And this is such a prophetic movie. The guy who makes these movies, I forget his name. He also made Starship Troopers, I think. He's from where? From Denmark? From Sweden? Something like that. And RoboCop is a prophetic movie. It was made back in, the 80s or the 90s. And It's about the privatization of the Detroit police force. Detroit has become a city of total anarchy, which it is now. Pick up the papers, right? It's a city of total anarchy, right? Crime is uncontrollable. And government is owned completely by corporations. So it's about privatization, this movie. It's hysterical. It's a movie which is a satire, an intelligent, vicious satire, despite the fact that it's a good Hollywood movie. Unfortunately, you won't like it too much if you're a girl, because there's a lot of blood and guts in it. Or if you're a sensitive boy, like I am. Too much blood and guts, right? I liked it better when I was younger, and I got older, and I don't like all the gore. But on the other hand, so this movie is prophetic, though, and it's politically astute, because it's made by a European, right? Paul Verhoeven, I think his name is. And in Europe, they are in another league when it comes to political understanding of the way things work, when it comes to, corruption, how corruption affects them, when it comes to governments imposing austerity, which is a total mask for just rich people getting more and you getting less. People over there are far more educated and aware politically. They know what they're doing. They know the forces of economics. They understand these things over there. American, and the voter turnout is something like 80 or 90% in Europe. The average voter and the average member of a political party knows far more than the American. And so, I'm getting disagreement from beyond the glass here in the studio outside. I'm getting disagreement. But what does he know? Anyhow, so, you want to come in the studio? Come on. You want to do it? Come on in here. So meanwhile, but this is my point of view. Let's put it that way. It's my opinion is that the average European knows far more than the average American knows about politics and exercise their right to vote, clearly far more than the Americans do as far as voter turnout. So in this movie, RoboCop, they make fun of media. They make fun of culture. They show you how things get dumber and dumbed down all the time. And then they show you how privatization happens. So they give this company Omnicorp, which basically owns the U.S. government already. They make weapons for the American government, and now I ask for it. Sit over here. This is Matt. And did you want to further identify yourself, or is Matt good enough?
Matt's fine.
Matt is fine. Okay.
I have to tell my parole officer these things before I go on.
Yes, go ahead.
So I don't think Europeans know more than the average American.
Because and this is based on?
Life experience of a whole 25 years.
You lived over there?
No, but I've smelt them. And
excuse me?
They have terrible body odor. There we go.
You see, now this
they
is,
have. If they're so smart, they'd get like deodorant with all their euros.
Okay, thank you very much, Matt. I appreciate it. Is there anything else you wanted to add? Because the microphone is yours. Anything else?
Well, also, okay,
and
they,
by the way, this is I want to just mention when we come back to reality after this short trip here, that we have Matt here and we have Myron, who is out there. He should not escape being identified. Because later on, I'm going to have a little something to say about... go ahead.
Also, they have they don't have the Electoral College, right? When they do votes, it's all populace.
Correct.
Yeah, so that's why we don't have a lot of voter turnout in America. Because my vote doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because New York's going blue anyway.
Uh-huh.
Even if I, you know, hold my breath. I don't know what I was going to say. But yeah. That's why they have a larger voter turnout.
Because but their vote counts.
Their vote counts and ours don't.
Well, that's another thing to add to why it's a better political system over there, right? Parliamentary elections, their vote directly counts better than ours.
Yeah, and their parliament works for them. I mean,
but you know, one of the reasons I think it works for them is because they hold it to account more than we hold our Congress to account. They can have more of a direct effect in a parliamentary system.
They can, and they can, and their election cycles are a lot different than ours. Their their politicians aren't guaranteed office for X amount of years.
That's right.
They can have elections whenever they want.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, to say that they are more in tune to their government, I think, is kind of absurd. I mean, look what's happening in Greece and the whole euro crisis. I mean, if they knew what was going on, they could have called for elections earlier. They could have said, we want our banks to appropriate the money X, Y, and Z.
So you think that they were just laying off and being lazy and not paying attention?
I think we were. All of us were.
But it was. But Greece is an example where that's just another example of people not holding
Greece, Spain, Italy, all of those countries
not holding them to account.
Well, and they were living off a lot of them were living off the government dole.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
retiring early, getting pensions, and
exactly,
which is a bad thing.
If the country can't afford it, it sure is.
But who says the country can't afford it? The bankers.
Everyone.
Who's everyone?
The politicians should have seen this coming anyway.
Politicians work for the bankers. They saw it coming, and they what did they care? They still had their jobs. They got their money off to the side.
Then it should have been brought to the people for elections.
So in a way, you're saying also that doesn't matter because the people, if I'm saying they're so responsible, then they should have been more responsible, seen it clearer, got in sooner, and demanded more things faster. Because
yes.
Otherwise, this mess they're in is not just the rich people doing it to them. It's their own responsibility.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. That's good.
Can I get a sound effect, Myron? Thank you.
Okay. All right.
I'll let you go back to reality, Mike. Thank you for having me on your show.
You're absolutely welcome, Matt. And, you know, any kind of line of vitamins you have or mops or choppers or dicers you want to sell, we can do that some other time.
Oh, okay. No problem.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
That's Gary's laugh.
Okay.
Sound clip.
Oh, thank you very much. Okay. Okay. And that brief episode was brought to you by Schizophrenia, which you can buy at any local store or online. Okay. So back to where we were anyhow. So I was brought up this way, Democrat, Republican, right? And it made a difference. It did actually make a difference. It seemed as if, and it was true. And if you read the newspapers, that there were certain newspapers that leaned actually liberal or Democratic. Once upon a time, the Fox newspaper in New York, which is the most vicious, horrible rag in the entire country now, which is just a pile of camel dung that actually flies at you like wasps, is the New York Post. That's owned by Murdoch, right? There's nothing worse than the New York Post. It's the most dumbed-down, vicious, bigoted, stupid, violently conservative, newspaper in the entire country. Used to be, before he bought it, and you go back in the 50s and 60s, a famously liberal, if not actually left-wing liberal, newspaper. And it was a sort of a Roosevelt kind of Democrat newspaper owned by a family called the Schiff family, anyhow. Oh, well, let me just finish up with RoboCop. So RoboCop, made by a European who knew better at the time, than some Europeans apparently do now. See this movie just for the political satire. So this movie, Omnicorp, This company, Omnicorp, owns, they provide weapons to the military. They own things. And it's an era of privatization. So the city of Detroit is falling apart because there's poverty. Rich people have looted the whole place. There's nothing left. The drug wars are out of control. It's almost like what goes on the Texas-Mexican border down there. And the city of Detroit, acknowledging that they can't control the city anymore, which is sort of like what's happening now, because they've been starved of government money and because corporations have looted the place and politicians have looted the place, they give the police department to Omnicorp. The Omnicorp, this giant company, you know, which has no soul and no morals, takes the city, they take over the police department of Detroit. This is one of the plot lines in the movie, right, or the initial plot line. And with technology, this is like so prophetic, this movie, with modern technology, the most advanced technology, and with corporate control, you know, all laws, you know, all rights, any rights that you had as a citizen completely disappear. Because once anybody privatizes, and you can see this in this movie RoboCop very clearly, anytime a corporation privatizes things, like they do in prisons and everywhere else in this country, anything that's privatized, your constitutional rights don't exist because it's a corporation. A corporation runs the police department. You don't have any rights anymore. Every time a corporation privatizes something, it diminishes everybody's ability to have basic rights as guaranteed, you know, in the amendments, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. So in any case, the Bill of Rights. So Omnicorp takes over the police department, and a cop gets wounded, right? The cop gets wounded, almost fatally wounded. He almost dies. So they take the opportunity, since he doesn't die, of preserving his brain and parts of his body and make him a kind of an artificial robot, but still a living, breathing person with some, you know, some morals left in him. And he goes around and he ignores anybody's rights whatsoever. Now, the movie makes it easy to ignore people's rights because it makes the most vicious criminals, like rapists, you know, wild-eyed, crazy drug dealers, people with no morals, murderers. And he deals with them. There is no such thing as reading people their rights or anything like that. So it appeals to the most Clint Eastwood in all people, right? You know, like, you scum, you murdered this person, you raped this person, you beat up this little kid, I'm supposed to read you your rights? Bang! You know? Make my day, right? So they get you to do that in the movie. But meanwhile, at one point in the movie, in this wonderful satire, and also see Starship Troopers, which is a great satire about, again, government control and government link-up with corporations. These two movies are some of the greatest satires ever made of these two things, which is what, frighteningly, is happening right now in front of our eyes here. So they ask this guy, RoboCop, gets out of a car, and, you know, he's about 6'5". He's made half out of metal. You know, you could shoot him, and it bounces off him, right? And he speaks in a monotone like this. He doesn't speak like a person anymore. He's been programmed. And he's got a gigantic gun, which is from another era, right? It's a handgun that works like a machine gun. So he shows up and he destroys somebody who is out of control, some criminal. He just shoots them, you know. He doesn't read anybody their rights. And they ask him, at one point they're asking him, what word do you have for that? He becomes a big hero in Detroit, right? This corporate policeman, this robot. And they said, which is what any corporation would love to do now. If the city of New York and Bloomberg could get together with some robotics company and with some technology company and turn policemen and turn soldiers, and they're doing this now. They use robots more and more in combat all the time. And they're using it, and then test them in Iraq, right? And they're using them all the time. They want to, like drones, they want to replace human beings with robots. It's all becoming Skynet. Sorry for all the cultural allusions, but it works, right? Skynet in the Terminator. Everything, the more they replace people in any way, the worse it is for the rest of us. Because robots and technology don't have morals. They don't have souls. They don't understand what it means to be a human being or how human beings feel because they don't feel anything because they're machines, right? And they are programmed by people who are people without morals and people who just are in it for profit or scientific achievement. And they have no sense of morals. They have no sense of what's right and wrong. They have no souls. So this is what you get, drones, robots, and everything. So they ask this robot, who is already, you know, a big hero in the city of Detroit because he blasts all the bad guys. They say, do you have any word for the children of Detroit? You know, some idiot, you know, newscaster sticks the microphone in his face. He says, stay in school. Get a good job. it's so vicious the way this filmmaker does it. Because obviously, back to current events here, staying in school now, unless you stay through graduate school and run up a bill of $200,000 in debt, staying in school is not going to get you a good job. It's going to keep you from being bored, maybe. It's going to bore you. I don't know what it's going to do for you. But you're not going to learn that much, unfortunately, because they cut teachers and education funding all over the place so they can kill more people and invade the rest of the world and do whatever else they do with their money, the government, our money, I should say. He says, stay in school, get a good job. There's no difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. Over the weekend, they had Mitt Romney had a fundraiser. There's nothing new about this, but there's a headline here. It's called the $3 million weekend. Let's see. Every few years, the 1%iness of the Hamptons, that's the very rich community on the eastern end of Long Island, where the richest people in the country live and have mansions. Every few years, the 1%iness of the Hamptons gets get that much 1%ier. Let's see, you know, parties where people, you know, pay 120, and these are political fundraising parties. People pay $125,000 to sit at a table for dinner or $50,000 for lunch so they can talk to the president or whoever's running for president. This weekend, Mitt Romney went out to the Hamptons to raise money, and he went to three places. One is a guy, three people's mansions. One of them is the largest mansion, one of the largest mansions in the entire country, has 40 bedrooms. Excuse me? Yeah, it has 40 bedrooms. So, I'm sorry, 40 rooms. I slandered the man. It's got 40 rooms, nine fireplaces. It's Ron Perlman, the head of Revlon, and he's also an entrepreneur and an investor, whatever that, basically. I don't know. Looks at my microphones. Oh, Chris? We'll take a call. I interrupt myself. Go ahead, Chris.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me? Hi. I listen to you occasionally, and
yeah.
I just want to tell you that I'm a baby boomer myself. I think I'm a little younger than you are, but I just want to tell you that I need to listen to your rant because I feel that I'm not the only one going insane in this country. I wanted to tie into what you were just talking about really quickly, and I appreciate you taking my call. It just kind of really pushed my button. You were talking about education in terms of the American and Europeans. I would just amend that in this way. The last couple of years, I think the whole world has gone insane for this reason. You know, in the same way that you have an umbilical cord, you know, when a child is born, you've got to cut the umbilical cord.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that all of these banksters, the multinational bankers, which includes Europeans and Americans, of course, they're connected to each other. And so a lot of the responses that you're seeing in these countries, because you mentioned Greece, I happen to be Greek. I speak the language, and so I'm familiar with what's going on a little bit more. And I just needed to say this on the air. I would just correct to say that the last couple of years, what you are seeing is a lot of craziness. However, what you are saying about education and about the educational system, and I'm not talking about higher education in the United States.
No, of course.
Always been true. You're absolutely right. You know why? Because in Europe, as a general, I'm not talking about Scandinavian countries, I don't know, but I remember in Greece even years ago, because I have relatives there, when they went to, you know, we have a four-year high school system here. I think I think theirs was 6 years, which was equivalent years ago to maybe 2 years of college education.
Right.
So when someone had a high school degree, they were regarded as very well educated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which is a term, by the way, that I'm sure you remember. This is another thing I wanted to say here. I remember when people went to college, okay, or just were autodidactic or learned on their own, and maybe they were artists and learned, you know, they had other interests.
Mm-hmm.
They were regarded as well-educated people, and there was another old-fashioned word. It was called well-rounded, which is something you don't hear today, because today, if it is not attached not only to money but to profit, you're totally irrelevant.
You have to throw in, you know, science and math, but to what end? Also to achieve a lot of money and to make profit, you know.
I mean, it's totally, but I wanted to say, you know, the response, I think the person who came on who answered the phone, and I don't mean this disrespect. I think he's probably quite young, But that response when, you know, that they could have done something different, you need to remember this, and you can mark my words.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. I mean, since you're mentioning Greece, I mean, what is your opinion about that? Why is it that things came to pass the way they are there?
Well, I'll tell you. When you talk about a parliamentary system, first of all, the party that just won now, which is equivalent to Republicans here, although it's not the same comparison, but, you know.
I understand.
They actually, from what I understand, because they have a parliamentary system, and they're much more represented just generally in Europe. Parliamentary system, by definition, is much more representative than it is here.
Sure.
Because over there, when you get like 2 or 3%, I'm not sure exactly what their requirement is, and even the lesser parties, I was watching when they had elections both time in Greece, and when they were showing, they would show parties that had gone down from 2% to 0.1, and they were still, I mean, you could still see it on the screen.
In other words, they have to make bargains and compromises more readily and more instantly in places like that. But here, the question being, why is it that if people are more involved in the political system, which I maintained, that they allowed things to get so far in Greece?
Well, in this particular case, and this is not to make, I'm not making excuses. I've tried to understand this from Goldman Sachs, which is so responsible for what's going on in Greece today. The problem that we have in America here in understanding it, and I, this is why I called, because the person who was speaking, and he said, it's a typical, and now he might be excused because he's younger, but I've heard this from people, you know, when you know, like the kind of mainstream, which I don't listen to anymore because my body can't take it because it's such slop to hear.
Yeah.
Americans have a need, and this is a general statement. I don't want to offend anybody here. I'm an American.
You don't have to qualify your remarks. Just go ahead and say it.
Yeah, you know, we have a need here to always demonize because we always feel that, well, you know, we're different because we're Americans. Even on the left, you get that.
But still, the question remains open. Why is it that in a place where you're saying and I'm claiming that people are more involved in their political system, they didn't put a stop to this kind of...
They tried. You know, okay. The fact is that the bankers, the people who have loaned them money, threatened them that they were just going to crash their economy, which is what was going to happen.
But why did they have an economy where they had to borrow so much money from the banks?
Because when you're in the euro, this is what I understood, they can't print their own money. Okay, this is the difference with America and Greece, for example, since we're talking about Italy or Spain right now. They can't print their own money, okay? They have...
Well, this country prints its own money, and this country borrows huge amounts of money. The whole country is in such debt that that cities are going bankrupt, and they're laying off teachers, doctors, everything, you know. So,
but I'm saying that Americans can still print their own money. I'm just saying that Greece was a very small economy compared to the other countries in Europe.
So maybe they shouldn't have been in the euro system.
Them and the others, because, I mean, this is a long discussion. I mean, I would love to get into it with you. I don't think I have the time.
Actually, I only have a few minutes left.
But the point is that when you were talking about, I mean, it's another discussion, but you were talking about, you know, education. There is no question that Europeans, as a general rule, and, you know, maybe, like I said earlier, the last 3 years might be excluded because of the insanity that's going on with the crash of the stock market. There's no question that they're politically, and it has nothing to do with degrees, by the way, okay?
It's a question of what they teach. They teach politics, they teach their own history, they teach economics.
They're much more political in the understanding of life,
right.
Okay? Here, people think, especially with the Internet, they get a little bit of information, but the information is not within the context of that old-fashioned word, which is understanding.
Mm-hmm.
A piece of information does not give you understanding, and that's another thing. Here in this country, language has been completely raped, okay?
Well, we can't go, we really can't. You're talking about every other remark you're making is enough for an entire radio show. We'll just end with the basic point, is that they don't really, and I know this is true, I remember when I was back in school, and it goes back a ways, that history was a very important subject. Then I remember back in the 70s and 80s, and there were articles about this everywhere, they actually stopped teaching history. No, I'm not talking about slowed down history or you know, kept the courses to a minimum. They actually didn't teach history. They didn't think it was necessary, right? It's just whatever's next or however you can make money or how you can excel in science or math. Now, little by little, they're reinstituting history courses, but they're not considered important anymore.
No.
They're at the low end of the totem pole. And everybody, especially if you're older, you understand that everything is based on what happened before. You know, that doesn't stop you from doing new things, and new things are created, but nothing comes out of nothing. You know, it's all based on what happened before, what went before, a chain
You're
of events.
You're absolutely right.
And that's the same thing with a political culture. And in this country, there is no sense of the past. There's no sense of history. And Oh, I'm just getting a sign. We've only got 5 minutes. So why don't you just wrap up for like a minute, well, and then I have to go back to what I was saying.
Look, I want to thank you for giving me the time that you gave
me.
Sure. I'm sorry if I seemed that I was digressing. It's such a hard subject to address. It's just that I wanted to say that people in this country need to understand that there is a connection with what's going on in Europe, straight to Wall Street here in America, and vice versa.
Well, that's,
there's a disconnectedness here, because the remark that the young person made who came on seemed to suggest that they were separate from us. They're not.
All right. Thanks. I'm going to move on because I only got a couple of minutes left. Chris, is it right?
Yes.
Also, are you involved with this Occupied Territory with our Facebook page? If you're not, please do get involved.
I will.
Okay.
Thanks
for calling. I really appreciate it. I don't want to start a generational war here, although I attempt to do that almost every time I get on the air, but maybe I'm getting back what I started, right? I should check my own karma meter, right? I don't really want to do that. Ultimately, I would like to rise above that. But what I wanted to make clear is, and the last thing that Chris here was saying is very important. You noticed the latest scandal, which, by the way, we all have only seen the very tip of, like an iceberg, is this LIBOR, L-I-B-O-R, which is the latest way that international banks in collusion with each other, like five mafia families who ran the whole country once, have rigged rates and fixed rates. Now, what happened is, and I'm not even going to attempt to explain this, but banks were able to loan and borrow money and to grant mortgages and student loans all based on a fixed rate. They fiddled with it at the highest levels. Even the people who were supposed to regulate it, same old story, what's new, either were being bribed or fell down on the job. One of the companies being investigated worse than other companies is J.P. Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon, right? But the biggest banks in the world now own the world. Interlockingly, they own the world. It's not absolutely a new phenomenon in the world. Once upon a time, a lot of banks in Europe controlled everything that went on in the world. But right now, banks, as you can clearly see from the newspaper, are telling governments what to do. They are ordering governments to fire employees. They are ordering governments to have quote-unquote austerity. They are raising the minimum age for retirement to 60s, 70s. Who knows, it'll go up to 80. Maybe there'll be no retirement. They want to lower the minimum wage so there is no minimum wage, right? It'll be like $2 or $1, whatever you can claw to get from the next person who works next to you. Banks are running the world now. Banks are running the world. They're buying and selling minerals across borders. They have their own, they fund armies, right? They bribe governments. They bribe everybody. And this LIBOR scandal, you watch this and see how it develops. You won't see so much reporting of it, first of all, because it's complicated, which means 90% of the media is too stupid or only presents stupid information or ignorant, one-dimensional information, usually about, happened to Jen and Brad or something, whatever they're doing. But you won't hear about this on major media, major TV stations or any place else, because it's hard to understand. So God forbid you should hear anything that's even slightly complex or difficult to understand. Also because it's the banks. Banks own the companies that own the media. And what they've done is the bankers have been fixing rates and selling you fake stuff and fraudulent stuff and lending out money to students for student loans. There's $1 trillion in student loans in this country alone, for mortgages, for everything. They've been fixing everything. The fix is in. Now, they used to, in Rome, when they were corrupt public officials, they used to sew people into bags with wild animals and throw them in a river. This is what they do with corrupt politicians. No banker has gone to jail for destroying the world economy so far. Not one of these bankers. And now, when you see the fact that the Finance Committee of the Senate or the House Finance Committee is going to investigate that, you heave a deep sigh of despair and change the channel. You know they're not going to do anything. They work for the banks. They work for the banks. The regulators get bribed. They work for the banks. The banks are running everything. The banks are running everything. They've bribed every politician to say that there has to be austerity in their country. In England, they spend $2 billion on security for the Olympics, and people are sleeping in the streets. It seems to me that what we need is a collective world revolution. There's never been a time now with this new technology to collect everybody together and have a world revolution. I would say, personally, if it wasn't illegal, this is what I'd like to see, but it's illegal. I'm just saying this out loud like a theory. I would drag these people, like in the French or Russian Revolution, I would drag them out of their mansions. I would drag them out of their banks. and I would take them over, get people who are homeless to live in these places, remodel and put bathrooms in, extra bathrooms, and get everybody off the streets who's homeless, who's been put out of a job, who has no pension, give them all the money that belongs to these banks, start from scratch all over again with collectives. That's what I would do. I would take their houses away, I would take their money away, and I would make them work in ditches or, you know, like putting garbage in garbage trucks or whatever it is, or military service, and show them how the rest of the world has to live from their thievery and from hard work. Anyhow, another show. I didn't get to cover a lot of things I wanted to, but we have time to do that. We'll be back. And thank you very much to Matt and Myron, who they will be starring at a local theater near you in some sort of movie, I'm sure, very soon. Matt and Myron at the Bachelorette party or whatever. All right, I'm running over? Okay. okay, so let's not have a generational war here. I don't want that. Obviously, older people listen to me, but I want everybody to listen eventually if I can get that. Let's go straight to our end theme here, and we'll be back. I'll be back on Monday with my show, The Turning Point, and then we'll be back next week with an interview with somebody who's going to talk about the impact of the Supreme Court Citizens United case, even in ways we haven't even seen yet.